Soccer Talk podcast, the only podcast that focuses on watching soccer on TV, online and apps. Coming up on this week's show, all of the details about the Champions League on CBS. We analyze what the MLS Cup final ratings mean for Major League Soccer and ABC, what CBS acquiring Champions League rights means for soccer in the United States, where the Bundesliga goes from here, plus we have letters from you, the listeners, in our mailbag section. My name is Christopher Harris, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Kartik Krishnayar. Kartik, for those listeners who haven't had a chance to listen to this podcast before, this is the only soccer media podcast in the business. What we do every week is we talk about everything from TV ratings to TV rights to reviews of new apps and new streaming services, as well as talking about the coverage of the beautiful game in terms of whether it's television or streaming, our thoughts on different commentators and production. Most of our listeners eat, live and breathe soccer 7 days a week. And as we're watching the beautiful game and watching all these soccer matches, oftentimes we have opinions about who has the best coverage and who has come the furthest along in terms of improvements, etc. Now, Kartik, this is probably going to be one of our biggest shows of the year. We've got a discussion about CBS that came out of nowhere. We've also got discussion, of course, about Major League Soccer and the TV ratings, which is always a big discussion point around the MLS Cup final. But let's start off this week's podcast by talking about what you thought of ABC's coverage of the 2019 MLS Cup final. The first MLS Cup final on ABC in 11 years.
Yeah, 2008 final, Columbus and the Red Bulls. I remember that final well. Columbus steamrolled through that season. That was the last time it was on ABC. They kicked off. That match was on the West Coast. Those were the days when they had, by the way, MLS Cup was at a neutral site venue until pretty recently. I want to say 2011 or 2012 is when it shifted to the team with the best record, or most points, hosting. So that was a neutral site. It was bad optics. It was the middle of the morning in late morning in California where the match was played, and ABC dispensed with covering. They stopped putting MLS Cup on ABC. The next year, Seattle, 10 years later, we're again in Seattle. Prime time on ESPN, the number goes down slightly, but the optics, everything was much better. So we returned to daytime and ABC for the first time in 11 years for 2019, and I thought they did the best they could. I didn't like the time slot. I didn't like the fact that it ended up being on the West Coast, which I think muted maybe some of the energy and pregame. Then again, Seattle is a great venue. Of course, it was on turf, which is an issue. And then I think overall, as competitive as MLS is allegedly, you had the same final for the third time in four seasons. And I think that that's great if it's the teams that MLS is building their stories about and building their brand around, like LAFC, like Atlanta United. But it ends up being Seattle, who we know has a massive following, and Toronto, who is not a U.S. team. So when we're talking in the context of U.S. ratings, I know you and I have had a disagreement about the ratings this week. I thought the rating was actually pretty good, considering Toronto was in the match. But that all inhibited the ability to get a great rating for this broadcast. The thing I will say, though, is ABC, ESPN coverage is far better than Fox. John Champion won an upgrade over what we've historically had in terms of commentators in this country. Taylor Twellman as co-commentator. Look, I like Stu Holden, but it's still they're not comparable, right? Taylor Twellman is on a different level. He's on an elite level as far as a commentary, and then just the production. I hate look, Chris. We try to be fair to Fox, right? Mm-hmm. We try to be objective about this, and I have defended Fox at times. And people don't believe I have, but I have. Go back and listen to earlier editions of this podcast. But then when you compare the production and just the professionalism, that's the word I have to use, of the presentation on Sunday of MLS Cup on ABC, ESPN on ABC, versus what we had on Fox the previous year. It's night and day.
So what about the pregame show?
I thought it was okay. I mean, look, again, in the context of Fox, it's better than that. It's kind of what they do for U.S. men's national team games also, right? Their pregame show is kind of this it's not a full-on pregame show. There's a lot of mixed things in it. I'm talking specifically about what ESPN does. Mm-hmm. They don't have the block of time. Now, this is the criticism, right, of ESPN and ABC. Well, ABC in this case, but ESPN. They don't necessarily devote the blocks of time to pregame that Fox does. However, again, maybe it's just my personal preferences. I get as much information out of 15 minutes of an ABC ESPN lead-in than an hour and a half or 2 hours of a Fox lead-in.
So for context, so for me, it was a completely different experience. As most of our listeners know, about 2 years ago, I cut the cord, so I got rid of cable, got rid of Comcast, and have Fubo TV, have Sling TV, have Fanatis and BR Live and other streaming services. So I consume and watch all of my soccer coverage and entertainment and news through the internet. So as a cord cutter for the Seattle against Toronto game, I was completely cut out of watching this match. So ABC is not available on Fubo TV, and it's not available on my Sling TV. So I thought, okay, let me try watching the game now on the ABC app. But tried to log into that, and it asked for an authentication, asked for a login through my cable or satellite provider, and Fubo and Sling TV was not included in that list. So I was stuck. I mean, I wanted to watch this game in English language. I could have watched it in Spanish on Univision through Fubo, but I wanted to watch it in English language. And to be honest with you, Kartik, I couldn't be bothered to go find my HD over-the-air antenna, find where that was, and then plug it in, and then try to figure out a way to get the ABC working, which it would have done eventually. This having been said, after watching probably about 6 hours of soccer before this, in terms of whether it was Liverpool, Man City, Man United, Brighton, Freiburg against Frankfurt. So I essentially skipped it. I was like, you know what, it's not worth it. I'm just going to watch the highlights later and catch up on it. So I missed it. The actual commentary, though, the commentary with John Champion and Twelman was as good as it normally is.
Yeah, and it's just a huge upgrade, I think, now with MLS. And this is, again, something Fox is going to have to be aware of. They've got, three more years on this deal. ESPN has changed the game by having that Champion-Twelman combination call the big MLS matches that are on ESPN and ESPN-affiliated networks, so Disney networks. I think there should be a response from Fox. I don't know that there will be, because I think they're very comfortable in how they present. And again, I don't want to make it a shot at John Strong. I prefer John Strong to a lot of European commentators. There are a number that I would say John Strong is better than. But Champion is just elevated. It's just I can't describe it, but you know what I'm saying. It's the way he calls the action, his cadence, his use of language, his use of funny anecdotes at the appropriate time. Mm-hmm. And Twelman feeds off it perfectly. So, it's really good.
I think with Fox, though, it depends who's in the studio and who's in the commentary booth. So, for example, I watched Bayern Munich against Dortmund, De Classica, on Saturday. And in the studio, you had Ian Joy, Warren Barton, and Stu Holden. And I thought they had a really good conversation, discussion about, the looking ahead pregame to this match and the players that would be kind of the key players and the tactical matchup, etc., between these two different teams. And then the commentary itself with Keith Costigan and I think it was Stu Holden together doing the commentary on that. And I thought that was really good too. I mean, Costigan's one of the best in the game, and actually Costigan and Stu Holden work great together. I always kind of feel that the John Strong-Stu Holden partnership isn't as the best partnership for Stu Holden. Nothing against John Strong, but I think John Strong plays better with some other co-commentators, and you get the best out of Stu Holden when you have somebody that's maybe a little bit more tactical as a lead commentator. But I would say with Ian Joy too, I mean, this is something that I'm not sure if any of the listeners watched this game because it was on FS2, But really, kind of a shout out to Ian Joy, because right before the match, there was a minute's silence for Enka, who had died a few years ago.
Tenth anniversary, actually.
Yeah, committed suicide. And pre-match, and this is a perfect example of how the Bundesliga usually struggles trying to become a global league in terms of appeal, is pre-match, the entire tribute over the PA was in German. Which, you mean, thankfully, Ian Joy stepped in and said, okay, I'll go ahead and translate this. So, you mean, you got the English translation of what the German public address person was saying. So you really, that came across the television set. So not only did you see the pictures and hear the sounds, but you had Ian Joy translating, which that's a slam dunk, and there's not that many football presenters that could actually translate that. I mean, imagine if that was Rob Stone. I mean, you'd be listening to this thinking, like, what are they talking about? What are they saying? I have no idea. But so with Fox,
they may not have even they were doing it on Fox. But I was thinking if Rob Stone were hosting, they may have just kept talking.
Yeah, I might have been talking over it and just saying, hey, this is a tribute to, a 10-year anniversary tribute to Enka, commemoration of Enka. But that's the thing, though, too. I mean, so I think with Fox, it depends a lot of the time who is actually, on set and who's in the booth, because that does make a big difference. They can be good at times when they use the talent to the best abilities. But anyway, overall from the past week, Kartik, saw a ton of other games, so Europa League, Premier League, Championship games. I went to the U.S. Women's National Team friendly against Costa Rica here in Jacksonville, enjoyed that one, and overall had a very good week of watching soccer. So Kartik, actually, let's move on to the big news. And this was stunning. I mean, well, first of all, with the CBS news about CBS acquiring the Champions League rights in the United States for 2021 through 2024, as well as Europa League, as well as Europa Conference League, which is the new tournament they're going to be debuting. What was your initial reaction, Kartik, when you heard the news?
I want to say I was stunned because everybody acted stunned, but no, I wasn't. Actually, I was in the Miami FC office. Mentioned it to a few people. It's keep in mind we're owned by Ricardo Silva. Ricardo Silva has close ties to BN. We have people on staff that know people that are involved with CBS, including myself, and it felt kind of natural. And I know that's a shock to a lot of soccer fans. What we had noticed in the last couple of months is CBS has increased its soccer output in terms of its website and its web division based here locally in Miami, Fort Lauderdale area. Their offices are actually in Fort Lauderdale. So there's been an increase in soccer coverage and output. In fact, when you type in into your search engine something about a given story in European football, it used to, the things that used to pop up were The Guardian, Telegraph, ESPN. There were always top sites. CBS now, in the last 6 months or so, has crept into that because they have lots of news reporting. They're producing some video content related to soccer. So I was stunned that this is what they grabbed. Maybe I was thinking, I hadn't really thought it through, but maybe logically they would have gotten some second tier European league and thrown it on CBS All Access to build first. But it seemed somewhat natural, given where CBS is, given that they don't have that much in the way of rights anymore. They're basically reliant on SEC football. They have the NFL, obviously, or the AFC, SEC football, and college basketball. Now, SEC football runs August to November, and they get the SEC championship game. They're basically out of the bowl business. They have the Sun Bowl. That's it. They don't have any of the college football playoff. They don't have any of the New Year's Day bowls. And then college basketball basically runs for them December through March. And then they have a lot of golf. I think they do a better job of covering golf than NBC, but that's just a personal preference. NBC's gotten better with their golf coverage since Comcast acquired them. Golf Channel, or since Comcast acquired NBC, and they already owned the Golf Channel at that point. So they don't have a whole lot in the way of high profile programming. Some of us who are of this age, you know, the age, the generation you and I are in, Chris, remember CBS having everything sports-wise in the 1990s. That was American sports related. They had the U.S. Open tennis. They had golf. They had the NBA. They had Major League Baseball for several seasons. And that deal actually is what led to their downfall, because they overpaid for the rights. NFL, NBA, I mentioned all of this stuff. Everything but the NHL and soccer content. So I think it's a pretty logical move. It's also going to be a little different for consumers. They'll be probably as much behind the paywall as you have on BR, but you have a CBS All Access, which has a lower price point. And I want to say, most importantly, now maybe BR would have gotten there, but the technology, the reliability of the streaming is significantly better than what we've seen with BR Live.
Yeah, so what we know so far is that CBS All Access, which is their own streaming service, will have every single match. It'll be $5.99 a month, that's with advertising, or $9.99 a month, and that's without advertising. This will start in August 2021, and will go through to 2024. And select games will air on the broadcast network on CBS, which is big news. So select games, what does that mean? Does that mean the final? Does that mean the quarterfinals? Does that mean the semifinals? We don't know yet. There's been no official announcement yet from CBS.
On this, I want to just jump in and say, weekday afternoons, it seems very odd that a network would show something over the air. However, if you look at the programming on CBS affiliates, particularly 3 Eastern to 5 Eastern, there's a lot of early local news, talk shows, you know, like your Dr. Phil, that sort of stuff. I can see the preemption there. I think the 1 to 3 o'clock, and I'm not sure how UEFA is going to do the time slots, East Coast time, in this next rights cycle. But the 1 to 3 o'clock, I think, might be a little more difficult for them to fit on the broadcast network because of long-running soaps that probably get more viewership. Although, again, I don't know. Maybe viewing habits on soap operas have changed in the on-demand era. So that's really encouraging that they're going to put some games on broadcast television. And I think the final is a natural. Will be on CBS. It being on CBS, I know we had 9 years of the final being on Fox broadcast. I'm a little older, so maybe millennials, younger people they see Fox in the same light as they see NBC, ABC, CBS. Perfectly fair. But for us of a certain vintage, there is a big difference between having a match, and this is why the Premier League does so well on NBC over the air. There's a big difference between having something on NBC and CBS and having something on Fox. It's just we grew up in a culture of 3 major networks. Fox, there are other reasons, maybe the Fox's production value, the fact that they don't have the sort of relationship with their affiliate stations. Their affiliate stations tended to be leftover stations in markets. The 3 biggest local stations in just about every market are NBC, ABC, CBS affiliates, or in bigger markets, owned stations by those networks. So yep. I think it makes a huge difference. So this is important. I want to stress this right now. We saw a lot of – we still see with Bundesliga a lot of preemption on Fox affiliates, right, where they don't air the games. We've seen it with Bundesliga. We saw it with Champions League at one point. We've seen it even here and there with MLS, where affiliates – we know the one here, Miami-Fort Lauderdale, in my area, Chris, has routinely, regularly preempted games. They preempted more matches than they've shown. Mm-hmm. This will likely not happen with CBS affiliates to the extent it happens with Fox. It'll be more like what you see with NBC and the Premier League, where if there's an NBC affiliate in a market, you can be pretty sure they're going to show the NBC programming in that time slot, which is a Premier League match. So it's bigger for the Champions League than being on Fox.
And I would say it's actually bigger for soccer fans in the United States than just the Champions League, because here you have CBS. For historically, I've always said, I think I've t- tweeted quite a few times is that I get the feeling that CBS hates soccer because they haven't gone into the business before, other than, I mean, select NASL games a few years ago, and way back when in the 70s and early 80s with NASL. But really, they've stayed out of the soccer business.
Yeah, they've done some college soccer, which has been I don't think anyone's noticed or cared, but they mm-hmm. they have done some college soccer smattering here and there.
But this is one of the biggest TV networks in the United States. I would say, actually, in many ways, that CBS is probably a better position than ABC. Like, so ABC, my experience with ABC just from this past weekend, I mean, being ABC being part of Disney, is that Disney and ESPN usually charge the most for rates. So that there's a reason why Fubo TV and Sling TV may not have ABC, is because they charge so much.
Chris, let me just, sorry to cut you off, jump in here again. And this isn't a shot at Disney, because I think they've done a wonderful job on cable, and I think they've done a reasonably good job with ABC. But ABC has fallen into a position where they're in many people's mind the third network, even when it comes to they're ahead of Fox. But there's a big three. And for many years in the 1970s, CBS was on top, and then NBC was on top. There were portions in the 1980s. There were times where ABC was the number one network, even for news, documentaries, news magazine programs like 2020. I feel like ABC has fallen off with their primetime programming. I think they've fallen off with their sports division being outsourced to ESPN, completely fallen off with that. And I think that they've definitely fallen off in their news division since Rune Aldridge, the venerable Rune Aldridge, retired. So yeah. CBS is in a really good position, and it's a really big deal for soccer because they're one of the two big networks. And so you have buy-in from NBC on the Premier League front. Now you have buy-in from CBS on the Champions League front. And those are the two most prominent competitions, most visible competitions in the world.
Yeah, and I would say that CBS is more accessible than ABC. I mean, pretty much all the major streaming providers, so whether it's Fubo, Sling TV, AT&T Now, and Hulu plus Live TV, and others have CBS. Many of them, I believe, do not have ABC. Well, I know Fubo and Sling TV don't have ABC. So that's a big thing. It's a big deal. And when I say this is big news for soccer, it's because it changes the whole landscape. So now, all of a sudden, when you look at Major League Soccer and the TV deal, which is going to end in 2022, and they're looking for the next TV deal, you're looking at the Premier League, and you're looking at that contract ending about the same time. There's a possibility now that CBS might say, hey, well, we've got the Champions League, we've got Europa League and the Europa Conference League. Why not let's look into Major League Soccer? Let's look into the Premier League. Let's look into putting in some bids on these to see if we can acquire those and build the soccer properties. There's no guarantee that they will, but it does add a lot more competition to the marketplace, which the leagues must be loving. They must be just salivating over the possibility of CBS coming in and trying to counter a bid against, say, an NBC or a Fox. So it's a healthy thing. At the end of the day, though, Kartik, it might be that it might be that just for the UEFA Champions League, it might be just the final on CBS and all the other games on CBS All Access. That's easily quite a possibility.
Yeah.
At the same time, though, it's a strange business when you think about it in the United States, because with CBS All Access, with any streaming solution, so if you look at ESPN Plus has been gobbling up all these different soccer rights. You look at CBS might say, for television, is soccer really a good fit for us? Really? I mean, in terms of having a lot of coverage, we don't have the same thing with ESPN Plus. We don't have that much spaces, time windows on each weekend during the season. We wouldn't be able to actually televise a lot of soccer games because we have college football and NFL. So let's go ahead and put it on our streaming service and sell that subscription, and maybe that price increases by the time Champions League comes around.
I think significantly with their college football, it's not like ESPN and Fox that are having pregame shows at 10 in the morning and then a college football game starting at noon Eastern time. CBS has one package in college football. It's a package they've had for over 20 years. It's the most successful package. It's just the SEC. It's like NBC having the niche with the Premier League. The SEC is the college football equivalent of the Premier League, in that it's the league that that has the most visibility. I made this comparison before. They only have that one league, Chris. So they show those games every Saturday at 3:30, which means if they got the rights to some soccer property, much like NBC, they could pigeonhole those 12:30 Eastern time, 1 o'clock Eastern time matches in before college football. It would actually fit their programming schedule perfectly, as it has with NBC, because NBC only has one college football package, which is Notre Dame, and that's even more sporadic than SEC. So CBS and NBC are actually better positioned to show European football on their networks than Fox or ESPN. Fox has gone all in on college football in the last decade, which was something they were not particularly interested in before they got the BCS rights in 2006 right. or so. So CBS might be a good option for a lot of leagues to look at now. Serie A, their rights are up soon.
Yeah, and with Fox too, in terms of college football, if any of you listeners have watched the Fox's coverage, that's where Rob Stone has ended up. So he's hosting a lot of the shows. Now, Kartik, in terms of CBS, have there been any clues or any hints that CBS may have been interested in trying to bid for soccer properties in the past, or at least any discussions?
They As I think some of our listeners know, I actually did a couple of NASL games for them as a co-commentator a few years ago in 2016 when they had the rights. And I think you mentioned that earlier, that NASL rights. They had, at the same time, were talking about increasing their video output and written content output about soccer. So I would again say that started around 2016, and they've gradually built it. They've up to where in 2019 they've nabbed a couple personalities, gotten some people involved on the written side. Now a lot of CBS's writers are dispersed all over the country, but they've so they're not necessarily centrally located, but they've built soccer content. So my thinking was they would not have just built that in a vacuum, because what I noticed with NBC was NBC had no soccer or anything, right? And they would show the Summer Olympic women's and men's tournament every 4 years and really not do a very good job with it, right? They wouldn't cover it properly, in my opinion. And that as after the 2008 Beijing Olympics, where I was very frustrated with NBC's coverage, and the U.S. won the gold medal on the women's side, very, very frustrated with their coverage of soccer, they began adding more and more content on their website, which, by the way, NBCSports.com, not as big in the sports web space, not as prominent in the sports web space as CBSSports.com. CBS, this whole time, has very little soccer content. Although I should mention, I believe SoccerNet, which eventually got bought by ESPN and is now ESPN FC, did start out as a CBS-owned soccer site to try and get some they had partnered with the Daily Mail on it initially. This was like 20-some-odd years ago, right. Big infancy of the web, because I know a lot of that content came out of CBS at the time.
That would have been like 97, 98, 99.
97, 98, Quick Info also, I think, may have started with CBS. But then CBS kind of got out of that business of international sports and websites. They also owned a company that did a number of the college athletic programs websites, CSTV, got out of that business. But my point being that they began to build up soccer actual original soccer content. Previously, they would have some wire service reports. There would be no soccer tab on the CBS Sports website. There would be no prominent display of soccer stories. That all began to change, I would say, around 2016. And I, being naive at the time, thought, oh, it's because they got our league's rights, right? The NASL rights. But it had nothing to do with that, because it was all about it was basically European football content. Some U.S. men's national team, women's national team, but mostly European. So I think maybe it's surprising in hindsight that they didn't make the run at it last time when Turner bid over the moon for it.
Yep.
But again, CBS being in a good position just in general in the media space probably thought, okay, these are 3-year right cycles with UEFA. Maybe we build our soccer operation, see where we are in a couple of years, and then make the bid. And that's what they did. And for Turner, I don't know. I guess we have to talk about what this does to them.
Yeah, for Turner Sports, I mean, first of all, CBS, according to one of my sources for this one, for the Champions League, they bid about $100 million a year to get this. Collectively, Univision and CBS together, it's $150 million a year for the rights. So I'm sure that ESPN mentioned that they were planning on going in and bidding on this one. And the surprise in this all this is how much that CBS is paying, but I mean that's where the rights are in terms of what broadcasters are paying, and we're at a time too really where if CBS wanted to make a strong commitment to soccer to come in to acquire some rights, I mean the Champions League is perfect in terms of something that's some of the best teams in Europe. Playing some high-level games. I mean, it's an attractive property. This is a great way for CBS to really enter the soccer market in a big way. Having said that, I mean, Turner Sports also went in on the bidding on this one too, but this really leaves Turner Sports in a tough spot because now they go into, well, they're not even into the final season of their coverage, but they've got the rest of this season, and then they've got next season, which is going to be their final season broadcasting the Champions League for viewers in the United States. That's a long way to go. The same thing happened to Fox too, where I think it was with the Champions League, where Fox went into that final season knowing that Turner Sports had already acquired the rights to the UEFA Champions League for the season after that. And where does Turner go from here? I don't really see them on the television side going back in for soccer. Now the BR Live. They still have the Scottish rights. I think they have the Belgian rights, and some other select leagues, which is very limited in terms of the coverage. I mean, they have Liverpool TV, they have Arsenal TV, they have Borussia Dortmund TV. So they have some club channels, but those are things that definitely do not cost much money in terms of acquisition fees. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with BR Live if they're focused after 2021, the summer, whether they decide to kind of shrink back and not do as much soccer coverage, or try to go back in and try to acquire some soccer rights. My thinking is that this is pretty much, the peak has already happened for Turner Sports, and I don't see them coming back into the soccer market. It's a tough market, and they've made so many mistakes along the way. They've made some improvements. They've tried some experiments. And even the BR Live platform has had problems, but they're going to be rolling that back into the Bleacher Report app, which is going to take a couple of years. The other thing, Kartik, going back to CBS for a second, is the big question is we don't know about talent or how they're going to broadcast or cover the Champions League. CBS does have studios in Connecticut and Fort Lauderdale. If they decide to use the studio in Fort Lauderdale to go ahead and cover the Champions League, I would be very confident in saying that my expectation is that CBS will probably try to get some of the talent from beIN Sports to try to acquire those people. So whether it's studio talent or whether it's commentators, they're just down the road. A lot of those talent live in the area. There's a big opportunity there to bring in some of that beIN Sports talent and instantly have some talent available in that area. What do you think, Kartik? Do you think they would go out? I mean, actually, this is a bigger question. You, having watched CBS for years and years and years, compared to me, who probably hasn't watched hardly any CBS because they haven't had soccer, What's your thinking in terms of CBS's strategy in terms of the voice of the Champions League? Are they more likely to have their own kind of local talent, or are they going to likely to use more of the world feed? What's your thinking in terms of listening and watching CBS, what they may be thinking in terms of putting their stamp on the Champions League and what that may be?
Yeah, I haven't watched the NFL in over a decade, so I'm not sure how they present the NFL. I haven't even watched Super Bowls, if I'm being honest with you. So I don't know what they do with that. College football, they have a studio show, but then they have a very clear voice of the SEC, which was Vern Lundquist, is now Brad Nessler. And then Gary Danielson is the analyst one time, and it had been Todd Blackledge. So they have one finite, you know, top team that they have to call the SEC. Golf is kind of instructive. The PGA Tour coverage on CBS, and then plus they have rights to the Masters. They've had the Masters since the 1950s, and the PGA Championship, which they've had since, I think, 1991. They have brought in a lot of foreign voices. Peter Osterhaus, who was on for many years. David Faraday is still on. They've had a couple of Nick Faldo is their lead commentator, lead co-commentator. So they've been willing to bring in Australian voices, British voices, European voices on their golf coverage. Similar when they had the U.S. Open in tennis, which if you follow tennis at all, everything is on ESPN now, other than the French Open, which is still on NBC. It's a lone holdout. Everything from the ATP Tour, everything is on ESPN. So they've monopolized tennis. So CBS hasn't had that in a number of years, but at the time when they had that, they would bring in some diverse voices. I think they probably will have one team that they have call the primary match. They won't have multiple teams like Fox. Maybe they're calling it out of the studio in Fort Lauderdale or the studio in Connecticut, fly over for certain matches. I don't think it'll be like Turner where they go all in on the international feed. However, I do think there'll be more international feed than native announcers. But they'll pick one. They'll pluck one major soccer commentator from BN. Let's be honest about this, from BN, and you can start speculating, or people who were formerly at BN, you could speculate about that as well. People who were at BN as recently as a year ago, there's several names that could come to mind, and pair them with a co-commentator, probably someone also who's been at BN, and build it that way. As far as studio shows, they will have a studio show. Who will host that? I'd look at BN. I don't think they're going to go with the people Turner has had unless they work through a specific sports agency. I don't want to get too deep into this in this podcast, but a lot of Turner's talent has ended up there because of affiliation with a single agency. CBS has a much more diverse portfolio of sporting rights and media rights than Turner. So I think they would be less reliant on going to a single agency to staff, which I think gives you some possibilities of having more diverse voices and better voices and just better overall coverage, even if it's all behind a paywall online. Most of it is, you will not have the clunkiness you do with BR Live. The one other thing I want to point out before we move on from the Champions League discussion is, there have been significant concerns about the reliability of the BR Live platform in terms of streaming, in terms of logins. We know they built that technology really quickly, right? And you reported on it at the time, Chris. And I think that more than anything, is probably why CBS is going to be a massive upgrade, because CBS All Access is reliable. CBS is not going to have a clunky looking platform. I think that there'll be no hidden costs with it. I think because CBS is who they are in the general media space, I don't think there'll be all of these problems. Now, the one thing I do have to point out is, if they don't recoup some of their losses, some of their investment in year one, could we see an NBC Sports Gold type model or change in their model like we saw with NBC, which gets everybody irate? It's possible, but I think 3-year right cycle, maybe they just won't even have time to do that.
Yeah, so it's exciting times. So for any listeners who are curious, on the website worldsoccertalk.com, we've got everything on there in terms of all of the news. So we have a video that has a walkthrough of CBS All Access to show you what it looks like. We also have a Q&A that goes through what you need to know about everything, about all your questions that you may have. We've got about 20 or 30 questions on there, as well as insights that we learned this week in terms of what CBS is saying so far about the Champions League coverage and And also, too, once the news is official, which it hasn't been officially announced yet, although CBS has confirmed that they have acquired the rights, we'll have a lot more coverage, and we're hoping to have some interviews with the CBS sports executives to find out more in terms of their strategy and vision. So check that out at worldsoccertalk.com. Now, Kartik, moving on to the next news item. And this is one of those big news items every year. Everyone talks about the MLS Cup final and looks at the TV rating and then goes ahead and makes observations and kind of insight in regards to that number and what it means for Major League Soccer. Is it on the up and up? Is it on the downward spiral? Whatever it may be. So for the Seattle-Toronto MLS Cup final English language, well, actually no, English language and Spanish language television in the United States, the viewership was 1.27 million. For ABC, Univision, TUDN, and TSN in Canada, so US and Canada, the viewership was 2 million viewers. Kartik, you mentioned before earlier on in this podcast, you thought the numbers were pretty good. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think the numbers are pretty good considering there was a Canadian team in it. And this is comparing the TSN and ABC numbers. Okay, this is something I have pointed out time and time again. I even saw it in my time at the NASL. Canadians are much more into watching soccer and their local teams than Americans are. So the numbers, relatively speaking, out of the overall pie of people who watch, who have TSN or have access to cable television in Canada, the rating number for even MLS regular season matches that involve Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, particularly Toronto and Vancouver, they drive more numbers than Montreal, are very high. In the NASL, we had this where I would see even just the analytics on social media and on video for our Canadian teams, Edmonton and Ottawa, and then Montreal before they jumped to MLS, were much higher. Mm-hmm. So this is something that is a recurring theme that I notice in the media space that American media doesn't necessarily pick up on, and American fans don't necessarily pick up on. And why the Canadian Premier League has been so successful in this first year, and I think eventually I don't like cross-border leagues, so I think eventually those Canadian teams need to be in their own league down the road, those three Canadian teams. Clearly, the CAN-PL is not at that level yet, but for those teams to jump, but maybe in 10 years it will be. But the numbers in Canada, to me, are always very significant and blow American numbers out of the water, really, when you think about it in relative terms.
And that's the thing, though, too. So I led this week, I think it was on Monday, with a story that mentioned the Seattle MLS Cup final TV ratings. And in the headline mentioned disappointing. And it's amazing how much flack I got for mentioning the word disappointing, as if it was like a really negative word. It's just a matter of fact. Those numbers, to me, are disappointing on the U.S. side. Now, the Canadian side, Kartik, you're absolutely correct. The viewership on that one was 748,000 people that watched that game on TSN, and TSN is in 8 million homes. In comparison, ABC is in 119 million homes, and the viewership for that game on ABC was 823,000 viewers, just a little bit, tiny little bit more than what TSN had with just 8 million homes. And that's where, to me, where I mentioned disappointing, and I am disappointed by those numbers. When we heard the news that the MLS Cup final was going to be on ABC, I'm thinking, okay, wow, this is going to be huge. The ABC, it's been so long since any games have been on ABC. Last year's final was, what, 1.5 million on Big Fox. And the number on ABC was almost 50% less than what Fox had last year. And that's the issue, that's the concern I have, and that's why I mentioned disappointing, is because of the ABC number. The Univision and TUDN number was 447,000, which is much greater than what they had last year. That number is strong, but again, going back to the ABC. And the ABC number, not only did I get called all sorts of different names, some of them I can't even repeat on this podcast, but got a lot of abuse from Major League Soccer fans because I mentioned the word disappointing. Even Taylor Twellman from ESPN, I mean, we had this big Twitter debate back and forth where Twellman called me out for saying, like, how can you be disappointed with the viewership for the ABC number, the 1.27 million? when Liverpool against Man City is considered a success at 1.2 million, just a little bit less. And the answer to that question is that because the Liverpool-Man City game was not on free-to-air television, was not on NBC. It was on NBCSN, which is a cable channel, which is in 84 million homes. It's not in a same, it's on ABC level. It's in almost 120 million homes. So that's kind of the feedback there on that. Awful announcing, the website even wrote, ESPN's Taylor Twellman stated in a very, very stupid argument with World Soccer Talk to try and claim that the US MLS Cup numbers were good. And I was surprised, really, because of Twellman, who I respect as a co-commentator. I think he's one of the best in the business in the United States, because he became super obsessed and almost super defensive about the TV ratings from this final. I was just stating that I was disappointed with it, stating the numbers. But he seemed really, really upset by this, and I was really surprised by that. I think part of it, Kartik, for me, is that when we look at this game, or take a step back from this game, and actually I got some correspondence from ESPN's PR people, too, saying that, hey, Chris, just to point out in terms of the numbers, locally within Seattle, it did great. Toronto is not a Nielsen market, so we don't have the number of viewers for that. But on a local level, it did great in Seattle. And my point is, while that's fair, that's all good. My point is, this is a national game. This is the final of a national league, or actually two nations. This should be much bigger, no matter who's in the final. Not just in Seattle, not just in Toronto, whichever cities are playing in that final. And there's been so much focus on kind of the local level in terms of TV ratings. For example, if Boston Red Sox met the New York Yankees in the World Series, then American broadcasters and journalists would be talking about the huge boost in TV ratings from the New York and Boston markets. But if it's Washington Nationals against the Houston Astros, then people complain about how poor the TV ratings are. And for me, Kartik, it's a little bit weird because when we're watching a game, whether it's Liverpool against Man City or, no matter which clubs it is from around the world, those clubs don't have a local city in the United States. I mean, this is a kind of a national game. This is an international sport. And we're watching this for the pure enjoyment of it. And I understand if you're not a Seattle fan and you're not a Toronto fan, you may be less interested in watching it, but you still tune in and watch the final, the biggest game of the season that should have a lot of relevance in terms of who's the best team in Major League Soccer. What's your take, Kartik? Am I off on this one?
The Seattle number, because we've seen when LA teams or New York teams are in MLS Cup, it doesn't. New England has been in MLS Cup many times, and when we've seen the Boston market, there's no move. They're LA. The times the Galaxy were in the MLS Cup, which has been frequent, the LA TV market number is just only slightly higher or mirrors the national number in terms of rating for market share. So I go back to the 2009 MLS Cup, the first one that was on ESPN, that when it shifted from ABC. Galaxy Real Salt Lake, that match was in Seattle actually in prime time. The Galaxy were the top team in the league, and the television rating in the LA TV market was the same as it was nationally. It was like a 0.8 or 0.9. The Salt Lake market, it was like a 7 share. So I think it is significant, but look, it is significant, but it's also not news that Seattle supports Seattle fans are more into the Sounders than maybe any fan base is into their local club in the United States. Local club side long term, and in fact, we found that a lot of Seattle fans aren't interested in other football. They don't care about the U.S. men's national team. They don't care about European football. That makes it very different than Portland. People lump Portland and Seattle together. Portland fans tend to be connoisseurs of football of all kinds, all sorts, and wake up at the wee hours of the morning to watch football, and then do their March to the Timbers match later in the day. So, it is significant, the rating in Seattle, but it's also not news, because Seattle is unique in the markets which MLS is in. In that, not only I think maybe Atlanta now mirrors that, where the Atlanta fans tend to be focused on Atlanta United and no other football. They don't care about the U.S. men's or women's national team. They don't care about European football. There are other markets where MLS is successful. Orlando, in our neck of the woods, comes to mind. But the Orlando fans are also fans of European football. The fans of some of these other teams, Kansas City is a successful team, but those fans are also watching European matches. So Seattle is very unique.
Yeah, so Seattle, without any shadow of a doubt, is a great soccer market. So is Portland, so is Atlanta, and probably a couple other cities in the United States. But my point is that nationally, Major League Soccer is largely irrelevant. I mean, now, so if it's your local city that's playing in the final, then there's a lot of relevancy. But it shouldn't be that way. To me, it should be, this is the biggest MLS game of the year. This has the most importance. So if people aren't tuning in, that says a lot. I mean, if the numbers are 50% down, and yes, there's a whole host of different reasons why, in terms of the kickoff time, in terms of Major League Soccer going up against the NFL, all these different reasons, which is something that Major League Soccer knows about ahead of time, has known about for years in terms of the scheduling, has made no changes to make an impact here. It's just kind of going on kind of blindly year after year, still going up against NFL games. It's just disappointing. It's disappointing because I think that in many ways that, I've been called anti-Major League Soccer, all sorts of different names this week, and I'm proud to be an American, but I'm not proud of Major League Soccer in terms of the way that the business has been run. I'm proud of Major League Soccer, the clubs, the players, the supporters groups, kind of the grassroots, the foundation, kind of the bottom up. I'm not proud of the top down in terms of the decisions that they're making, in terms of trying to go up against the NFL, trying to have a season that really goes on too long. It shouldn't be playing into September, October, November. You mean you should be looking at the scheduling, looking at the calendar, looking at making some changes. They're going to have a real change for the way that this league is televised. And I'm not seeing that. I'm not seeing any progress. And that's one of the reasons, too, I'm disappointed in that number. I expected easily on ABC, I was expecting probably 1.5 to 2 million viewers watching this game. Instead, we got 823,000. Now, Kartik, one last news item before we heading into the next segment.
Yes, Spanish TV will not bid on the Super Cup rights due to the Saudi human rights record. Quote, we feel... I said Spanish TV, I believe. I hope I didn't say Saudi TV. Quote, we feel we should not bid for a Super Cup, which will be played in a place where human rights are not respected, unquote. Spain's public broadcaster said, adding there was particular concern over the rights of women. The Spanish Super Cup is scheduled for January with Barcelona, Real Madrid, Valencia, and Atleti. This is very, very significant. There was a lot of concern about Spain and the revamped kind of cup format and taking the Super Cup to Saudi Arabia. Italy has done something very similar. And from my personal perspective, I think this is a very good to see that there's a pushback against this from public television in Spain.
All right, moving on to TV ratings, and we will have the full list at worldsoccertalk.com. We will talk about one of them, Kartik, one of those numbers, and that's Bayern Munich against Borussia Dortmund, De Clásica. The biggest game of the season for the Bundesliga. This game, unfortunately, was on FS2 because FS1 and Big Fox had college football. And the viewing number for this game on Saturday was 71,000 people tuned in to watch this game, the biggest game of the season. Where does the Bundesliga go from here, Kartik? I mean, so FS2, off the top of my head, in terms of the number of homes it's in, I believe it's about 70 million homes in the United States, maybe even a little bit more than that. Then you look at ESPN Plus starting next season, which currently is in 2 million homes. The viewership for Bayern against Dortmund at 71,000 on FS2, I mean, that's probably going to be a peak unless they can get it on Big Fox or FS1 in the other game, probably early next 2020 or usually in the spring. But where does the Bundesliga go from here? Have they hit a peak and it's down from here?
Yeah, I think it probably is. I mean, for this match, I had to go. We had the NISA championship for East Coast championship for Miami FC. I was at the stadium from 11 a.m. onward till 11 p.m. Right, so I missed this match, but I DVR'd it. I saw the score. I was so disheartened. I never watched it. I don't know if there are other people who are in that disheartened because I don't like Bayern, and I tend to support Dortmund in these matches, but. I don't know if there were other people in the same boat I was in that saw the score and said, oh, this is typical Dortmund. Every time there's an opportunity for them to beat Bayern in a significant match, when Bayern's on the ropes, they never do it. And Lucien Favre, I think his job is very much on the line in the coming weeks. But, yeah, that number is embarrassing. It's terrible. And I don't know that if you can't get an audience for that match – I don't know how you do it. And yes, they've got this ESPN deal, but these matches, except for maybe this game, the Der Klassiker, and maybe some other significant Bayern matches and Dortmund matches, Dortmund Schalke, that derby, et cetera, will be behind the ESPN Plus streaming wall. I just don't know that the audience is going to grow. And look, Mönchengladbach is doing very well in the league now. They're top of the table. They're 4 points clear. You've got a lot of competitive, a lot of competition this year in the Bundesliga. It's been exciting. The top teams have consistently been dropping points. It's been much more competitive, in my opinion, in the Premier League, where we already know who the top four are going to be at the end of the season in the Premier League. It's just what order are they going to be in, right? Mm-hmm. This season, we know who the top four are. It's done. But still, there is a perception in this country that Bayern always wins the title. And when I've told people, even in my office, hey, the Bundesliga, they're watching a La Liga game on BN while we're in the office on a weekday afternoon, and I turn on the Bundesliga, let's say Friday afternoon, and I'm saying, hey, this league's more competitive. There are 10 teams within 5 points, etc. A couple weeks ago, it's like, no, Bayern will win the title in the end. That's the reaction.
Yeah.
And you don't have that about any other league except for France. And actually, in France, Monaco has won the title much more recently than Dortmund has, or anyone other than Bayern. So it's a problem. I mean, what the Bundesliga needs in this country is Bayern not to win a title.
Right, right. And even then, I think it's too late. Even in terms of viewership in the United States, in terms of really making a big difference. Short term, yeah, there's going to be some more headlines and there'll be more interest in the league, but... long term, I think they've missed the opportunity. And let's move on to the listener mailbag. And the first comment is from Bradley Moore, and he talks about this in a little bit of detail. He says, I read your article on the Bundesliga and what you feel it needs to compete in the U.S. soccer marketplace. My feeling is the league missed their best opportunity in the United States market during the 2012 to 2015 timeframe. Klopp was winning league titles with Dortmund and reaching the Champions League final. Bayern won the treble. The most well-known coach, Pep Guardiola, skipped England and Italy to coach Bayern. Germany won the World Cup with top players not only in Germany but also exported to other top European sides. In time, the league would have benefited in North America from Pulisic's rise at Dortmund and Chicharito's stint at Bayer Leverkusen. But the Bundesliga was on Goal TV, which during that time lost households due to La Liga heading to BN. One of the great what-ifs in the last decade, what if Fox had retained the Premier League rights in 2012 and after missing out, NBC gave the Bundesliga a chance and even put 80% of their work they put into pushing the Premier League. I don't believe the Premier League would have been supplanted, but if NBC had excellent Bundesliga coverage, I wonder if they would have attracted a lot more new fans, or at least provided a real alternative to the Premier League if Fox coverage remained subpar. Instead, the iron cooled, NBC got the Premier League rights, and solidified itself in the US market. Bundesliga never stood a chance against NBC's excellent Premier League coverage. Fox didn't help. And Kartik, I've never thought about that, but that's some really fantastic insight there by Bradley Moore and some great what ifs.
Yeah, I think for me, the greatest what if is that 2012 to 15 time frame, I think re-upping with Gold TV, even if they had gone to Fox at that point, I think they would have been in a much better place, because those were years. Again, Klopp did win two successive titles at Dortmund. He became a very likable figure. I think a lot of him becoming a likable figure in the U.S. had to do with Fox's coverage of the Champions League, by the way. So if they had been on Fox a right cycle earlier, when Gold TV was abandoned by Serie A and La Liga and went to BN, and BN started in 2012, had at that point the Bundesliga moved to Fox, I think we're talking about a different story. Now, no, they would not have been anywhere near the neighborhood of the Premier League. But I think more so than saying, hey, if NBC had attained the rights and Fox had kept the Premier League, I think if they had gone to Fox earlier, they'd be in a better place. But they didn't. And they're where they are now. And this is also a talking point for La Liga. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but La Liga stays on, and I had this conversation with a source the other day, La Liga stays on BN for the entirety of this global deal that's been signed with BN. La Liga, besides Barcelona and Real Madrid being in Champions League, and now that's going to be on CBS, so they'll have more prominence, will be nowhere in this country. So there is a real cost in an emerging market like the United States for putting yourself virtually in the dark as a European Football League. I think La Liga, I understand they might have some outs in that contract. They've got, I think if BN doesn't increase its distribution two or threefold in the next year, they've got to find a way out. They got to find a way to Univision or to DNA or NBC or someplace. Mm-hmm.
John Average Geek goes on to say, I get the fan protests of the Monday Bundesliga matches from an away fan perspective, but not from the home fans. Not playing on Monday reminds me back in the 90s when SEC only played Saturday afternoons. League lost a little edge. Only when it expanded to other times did it grow. Martin McKay says, I'd rather pay $5 a month and I know I'm getting games at certain times, rather than paying nothing and never being sure if a game is on all weekend. Sometimes it's four games on FS1, other times it's zero. This is talking about the Bundesliga. Point number two, I would have to pay more for FS2 or Fox Soccer Match Pass than I do for ESPN Plus, which offers me much more besides every Bundesliga game in 2020. Lastly, I feel demeaned, maybe just me, he says, as a soccer fan, to have NASCAR truck qualifying seen as more important to Fox than Bundesliga games with global appeal. If Fox prioritizes truck racing qualifying over soccer, then yes, I am happy for them to lose the Bundesliga. I will even go through extra steps of illegally streaming if need be. Frankly, Bundesliga on Fox is a fallback option on most weekends. Thankfully, I won't need to do that anymore because I'm getting ESPN Plus next September when the Bundesliga appears. Some strong comments there about the Bundesliga situation with Fox. And going back, to Kartik, to what you said about La Liga. Yeah, and at short term, they got a ton of money in a global deal from beIN Sports. Long term, you have to worry about not the sustainability, but the success, the popularity of La Liga, especially after now that Ronaldo's gone and Messi's getting older. I mean, maybe they missed the boat too, as well as the Bundesliga missing their boat. Next up is Paul Robinson talking about last week's podcast with guest co-host Mark Donaldson. And Paul says, loved your synopsis of Gary Birtles. He'd be complaining if he were sat on a tropical beach with margaritas and beautiful girls serving him the drinks. He would find something that was wrong with the situation. Paul goes on to say, I was watching a game last week that Gary Birtles was doing the commentary on DAZN Canada. And my wife wondered if this guy just got out of bed the wrong way. I informed her that he was like this all the time. Her response was, why can't I just have Ray Hudson do Premier League commentary? And that's the thing, too. I mean, talking about Gary Birtles is, I love Gary Birtles for the way he is. Yes, he's negative. Yes, he's always like, frustrated. He's always like, well, why didn't the player hit the ball with his left foot instead of his right foot? He's always, in hindsight, complaining. But I love that about Gary. That makes him very unique. Matt says, I really enjoy the pod and listen every week. I wanted to make a few comments about items that come up from time to time. I'm a big soccer fan, but also a big MMA, boxing, and Formula One fan. So sometimes you guys make comments about the coverage or rights to these sports, but are not correct. Formula One is currently with ESPN. They took over the rights this year from NBC. They actually have a deal with Sky Sports and mirror their coverage each race weekend, which is amazing for F1 fans in the US since NBC commentators were horrible. DAZN's main focus right now is boxing. They have signed the sport's biggest star, Canelo Alvarez, to the largest deal in sports history, over $300 million. They also have the rights to other big-name fighters like GGG, Anthony Joshua, among others, and feature fights from the promoters Matchroom and Golden Boy. They do show some MMA as well, but that is secondary to boxing. They have a contract with Bellator MMA in addition to some smaller companies internationally. You guys have to remember that MMA is the name of the sport, not UFC. Then there are leagues like UFC, Bellator ONE, PFL, Rizin, etc. UFC obviously being the biggest one, and they have a huge deal with ESPN, ESPN Plus. I would say that they are most likely driving the subscription numbers for ESPN Plus more than any other property. Also, when you guys talk about possible global subscription numbers for Disney Plus, and then including that with ESPN Plus, I don't see how that makes sense. Would ESPN Plus be available anywhere outside of the US? The rights they have for all the sports in the US obviously wouldn't be able to be shown in those other countries. Am I missing something with that? I guess they could start a DAZN-type service that acquires different rights for different territories, but I don't think they have discussed that. Sorry to bring this all up, but I wanted to clarify some of these areas that were brought up from time to time. And Matt, yeah, we really appreciate that, because I obviously don't know anything about MMA or boxing or fighting. But in answer to your question about ESPN Plus, I believe that they are planning on international expansion and doing very much like a DAZN model too, looking at different countries and those rights in those areas, because ESPN has a ton of rights in Asia, in Australasia, and other places that they could put that on some of those on ESPN Plus and market that.
Yeah, I can actually say from the South Asia perspective, in India, they have Disney acquired a ton of rights, and that they have invested in Hotstar and other places to throw things, to dump some of those rights there. But I think it is something they're looking at. And by the way, I do completely agree on the UFC, ESPN Plus. UFC is a big driver of ESPN Plus. I have observed that myself. I think I had written an article a while back, a news item for Sport Business, attributing the UFC rights to the reason why ESPN Plus numbers were so gaudy, in addition to them folding insider subscribers, which was a little hidden thing they did, a little tricky thing they did. The people who had subscribed to the ESPN insider written content suddenly got rolled over into ESPN Plus, and that spiked the numbers as well.
Next up is Bill Reese, and he asks a very good question. He says, over the last few years, many Liga MX games have been simulcast in English on Facebook or Twitter. Is there any reason that TuduNA could not simulcast Liga MX matches in English using the SAP button like they do with Major League Soccer matches on Unimas and Big Univision? Kartik, I'm not sure about this one. What about you? Do you have any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, I do. I think maybe they don't have the talent in-house. I'm actually surprised they haven't, because a big part of the push of 2DNA was to be bilingual and to have bilingual rights, which is why I thought, since I didn't bring it up earlier in the show, Champions League, they might try and acquire the Champions League rights in English to complement their Spanish rights. So maybe they will do this at some point with Liga MX, or perhaps they just think that the audience that watches Liga MX, the vast majority of it is consuming their product in Spanish with Spanish mm-hmm. commentary. That must be the reason, because yeah. obviously there's English commentary that's available at times, as you mentioned, and they do it for MLS. They've been doing it for MLS since 2015, at least. I remember 2015 them starting it when it was still UDNA, Univision Deportes Network. Mm-hmm. They would simulcast those, or you would hit the SAP button and there was English commentary.
Yeah, and they have a lot of the rights in English language to a lot of the Liga MX clubs, but they're choosing not to go ahead and broadcast in English for those clubs, even though they have the rights. I think the part about Facebook or Twitter, part of it is probably Facebook doing a deal with them. You mean Facebook coming in and saying, hey, we want to go ahead and have English language broadcasts of Club America home games on Facebook. We're willing to pay you X amount of, you know, who knows how much money to have that on Facebook. And then Twitter maybe at the same time saying, like, well, if Facebook's talking about it, we'd be interested too, and this is how much we're willing to pay. I guess at the end of the day, going back to your question, Bill, is I think the perception is that there's probably not enough demand for that right now. And TudoNA could be holding on to those rights, thinking, okay, it's whether it's Facebook or Twitter coming to them with money, or holding off on that until there's an opportunity to grow that market to actually see some, you mean, revenue coming back and making it worthwhile. So in the meantime, they're almost like protecting their assets in many ways in terms of keeping holding on to those English language rights. Last up in the listener mailbag is Bunty Kumar. He says, watching the last few years of U.S. men's national team, it is symbolic of my son's college soccer experience. American coaches who do not emphasize or even understand the importance of technical and tactical skill development. They want fast, athletic, alpha males who do not have any sense of creativity but try the brute force method to achieve immediate results. The arrogance of both the club and collegiate level is breathtaking. And now you are seeing the product of years and years of this culture. Even Pulisic looks uncomfortable and lost in the current U.S. system. This is a shame because he is a unique talent. Berhalter was a mediocre coach at best in Columbus and failed miserably when he coached in Europe. Why is anyone surprised? U.S. men's national team is getting exactly what they deserve. Kartik, agree or disagree there?
Yeah, I mean, I think Berhalter has a system and a style he wants to play, which is a very Dutch style, which is difficult to do with players who aren't very technical. It's also very difficult to do with players who you don't have, except for maybe 5 weeks out of the year, right? In camp, 5 or 6 weeks out of the year. So I think he's got a tough job. But, yeah, his results in Columbus were mediocre, a little bit over mediocre. He was able to essentially build that team around foreign players. If you go back and look at the Columbus team, and I did a long analysis right after he was hired for YanksterComing.com, if you're interested, check it out. My analysis there was that he needed foreign technical players to execute the way he wanted to play out of the back, and that I had a concern that outside of John Brooks, and now we see the emergence of Aaron Long, but outside of John Brooks at the time, we don't have an American central defenders that are technical enough to play out of the back, and we have fullbacks that generally are poorly positioned in play. But then part of it could be the U.S. Because look, DeAndre Yedlin is a clear example of a guy that is being a consistently, you know, lower table Premier League fullback that can play consistently and play effectively consistently for Rafa Benitez and now Steve Bruce, for Sam Allardyce before at Sunderland, who is generally liable for a goal or two a game or a mistake or two a game with the United States. So I think it's also the camp and the surrounding circumstances. And we see this with a lot of the players who come in from the Bundesliga. I saw Alfredo Morales, who I've really liked at Fortuna Dusseldorf these last two seasons since they've been back in the Bundesliga, come in for one U.S. game. I can't remember which game it was. So I think it was in the September break. And just be disastrous. Maybe be like a 2 out of 10. But that's not the same player I see in the Bundesliga. So I think there's also something with the culture. When you have more technical players or players that have learned, maybe they may be less technical, but they have learned positioning sense and the proper use of space and marking and concepts like that, which are not often taught at the youth level in the United States in a tactical sense. They have more tactical awareness, come to the U.S. team and just look completely out of their depth because of the camp and the surroundings. And maybe it's an unhappy camp. I think there are a lot of things that American soccer media may not be really analyzing with this situation, but it's not good. And we're taping this the day before a match here in Florida, in Orlando against Canada. And it's a pretty dire situation. If the U.S. doesn't get 3 points in that match, they're not going to advance out of the Nations League into the semifinals, which is just a stunning situation when you consider the group that was handed to them.
Yeah, one more thing on this too, Kartik, is this is coming back from almost 2 years ago, but there was something that Jeff Cameron said in a piece he wrote for the Players Tribune. And what he said is, the powers that be in U.S. soccer have created a poisonous divide between the MLS players and the so-called, in quotation marks, European players. All right, well, we want you to have your say, so you can always reach us via email through web at worldsoccertalk.com, as well as facebook.com/worldsoccertalk, and on Twitter at worldsoccertalk. Plus, of course, you can post your comments on worldsoccertalk.com. And Kartik, if they want to kind of get in touch with you or find out what's going on in your life, hear your thoughts, where's the best place they can find you on social media?
KKFLA737 on Twitter.
Excellent. All right. And you can always catch me at World Soccer Talk on Twitter. So thank you for listening. You can get a new episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast every Thursday. Every episode is released on SoundCloud, Spotify, Pandora, YouTube, Stitcher, iTunes, TuneIn, Audioboom, Overcast, and worldsoccertalk.com. If you like the show, share it with your friends on social media and give us a review on iTunes. And Kartik, heading into another international break?
Yeah.
What should they try to do?
Try and enjoy your football. There is a USL championship match this weekend on ESPN, the ESPN networks. Their championship, Louisville RSL's B team, Monarchs. I'd watch that. It's competitive football, at least. It's not international football. So enjoy your football.